dbkmediaservices.com.
You are listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SBC Sports Talk Podcast. SBC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. And now, here are your hosts, Shane Combs, John Bruce, and Bruce Knox.
Hello, everybody, and welcome in to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk. My name is Bruce Knox. I will be one of the three people you will be listening to as you listen to this show, episode number 276. It is brought to you by Triple Crown Family Fun Center. All kinds of fun under one roof. Located at 1 Nancy Wilson Way in Chillicothe, right off of Bridge Street, just behind the Hampton Inn. And they are open 7 days a week from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. You can give them a call, 740-773-7529, or look them up on the web for more detailed information. The address for the website, TripleCrownFamilyFunCenter.com. Like to say hello and welcome in to, first, Mr. John Bruce. John, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you?
I'm doing well. We are recording again on Sunday night, and we welcome John into the studio here after a wild and woolly week. You probably got all your schooling in this week anyway. You did. But
we were actually out on Friday.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Not due to illness, thankfully.
Right.
But due to the weather. So yep. it was nice, though.
Okay. And then we'd like to welcome in Shane Combs as well. And Shane, I know you didn't get much school in this past week, did you?
No. I was joking that Coxie and Coach Bumgarner there from our Twitter discussion last week, they'd be proud of Paint Valley. When we shut it down, we went ahead and shut it all down.
Did it the right way, didn't you?
Yes, I know they would be happy with us in terms of our academic focus. So, but no, in all seriousness, it was a weird week. I was in the gym the first 5 days, and then Saturday I ended up I had limited choices, but I ended up not going on Saturday to a game. But Monday night I saw some junior high, Paint Valley and Uniota girls, some nice young talent, both those schools. They split that night. And then Tuesday, I was at Southeastern over at Huntington girls. And then Wednesday, I watched Uniota Hillsboro boys. And Thursday, Southeastern Edina girls. Friday, I went up to Westfall, watched Westfall and Huntington girls boys doubleheader. And then, like I said, Saturday, I almost made it out to Edina. And I was going to go to Huntington. They canceled. And then, so I just took that night off. But, we'd been out of the gym basically Wednesday through the end of the week. So we were searching for some gyms ourselves to practice in and so forth. But yeah, just kind of a weird week. And I know it's a scheduling nightmare for a lot of people, but it is what it is.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. Why don't you kind of give us a clue as to what else we'll talk about this week?
Well, we have a great show. It's always one of our more popular shows. Obviously, as we take you through our North Fork Animal Clinic, Advanced Services, and Crown Hill Golf Club segments, we have three pretty good discussion points tonight. Obviously, our feature will be in there with our all-league girls team, our annual. We used to do it through the website. Now we've made it more of a kind of a podcast feature, but that always draws a lot of attention and a chance to, no matter what you agree with, disagree with, it's a chance to really kind of talk about 15, 20, 25 girls and just really highlight the great year they've had. And then we'll obviously break down the boys' tournament brackets and then some exchanging film and some scouting and some different things there. So, again, thank you, North Fork Animal Clinic, Advanced Services, Crown Hill Golf Club. Should be a lot of fun, a lot of good stuff this week.
Yeah, and as we mentioned, it has been a wild and woolly week here. You know, we've had the illness thing, and then Friday we had the weather concerns. How are they going to impact what we see moving forward? Just I'll throw that out to either one of you. Which one wants to talk first about it?
Oh, it's going to be crazy. It's going to be a circus. You're going to have, on the girls' side, you not only have the reschedules, but now you have the tournament stuff right there in the middle. And you have some schools that haven't practiced in their own gym in 5 or 6 days. Then you also have on the boys' side, even the way they're going to jam them into this week and try to get them all in and so forth. So you just cross your fingers and hope that you'll attend school all week. But yeah, it's going to be crazy.
Now, have you seen Huntington's boys' schedule for the week, Shane?
I have, and you're leading me to my next point. That was going to be my answer to the follow up question here in just a second. Go ahead and share that if you want.
Yeah, they play Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, then they get a big break and come back Friday, Saturday.
Wow.
Yeah, it's I think three of them are league games.
It's like 23% of your schedule. Just doing some quick math there in the final week of the season.
Yeah, it's just got a lot going on. It'll be hard to make adjustments because, you know, you're not gonna have practice time.
Yeah,
but hopefully they can stay healthy. I think they got a slight break by not playing the tournament till Wednesday. So I guess that's better than playing on Monday. But yeah, that's a lot.
Well, I would even throw in this, John. It goes back to my theory of last week of there's some winnable games in that mix too.
Yes.
So, you know, what's two or three more wins look like, you know, on your tournament draw, and we'll get to this later, but instead of seeing a team that I'm sure they wanted to avoid in the first round, now you have them. So, I mean, it's just, again, just there's some unique things when it comes to scheduling and the luck of the draw sometimes on how these things hit you and when they hit you.
Well, who gets hurt the most through all this? Can you guys comment on all that?
Well, I think it's for sure the Huntington boys. I don't know of an example far different than that. I think a lot of your girls, you know, get hit from it. You know, you get some unique situations depending on who wins and loses. You may be playing regular season after being eliminated from the tournament, and I don't know that that's ever good. I don't know that that benefits anybody. So a lot of the girls could be impacted by that. If I twist it the other way, I do think that Uniota and Zane Trace boys have avoided the impact. So yes. With the boys league, I think they've remained pretty lucky in terms of going ahead and having the proper preparation and ready to obviously they're both going to be heavy favorites. You know, you don't take anything for granted as we've seen in some of the close games here lately. But I would say Huntington boys for sure would have to be the answer there, as John just highlighted about their schedule.
Yep, it's that's going to be very – I mean, they will be plum tuckered out come next Saturday night after all that. And then you said, John, they play the following Wednesday on the tournament. Is that correct?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So I mean, it could have been worse, but, you know, I guess they get a slight break there, but it's not much of a break because I'm sure South Webster doesn't play five times this week, so they'll be able to watch them plenty. Yep. In person, and let alone whatever they get on film.
All right, guys, let's get moving right along here into our first segment. In this week's first segment, we're going to look at Selection Sunday for the boys, including a breakdown of all eight SVC boys team as they prepare for their second season. And our first full segment of the podcast is going to be brought to us by North Fork Animal Clinic, Boarding and Grooming. Dr. Blake Lloyd and his staff located at 2260 Anderson Station Road in Chillicothe. Their phone number is 740-773-7387. You can look them up on the web as well at northforkanimalclinic.com. Appreciate their continued support. And as we mentioned, it is tournament bracket Sunday for the boys anyway. We talked last week, guys, on our thoughts on procedures. So we're not going to be repetitive and go into that again, although I think you guys got some pretty good ideas. So let's just kind of focus on the brackets. And first, let's talk about your thoughts on our likely co-champs in Unioto and Zane Trace. What do you think of their matchups?
Well, I'll go ahead and go. I think that I like Unioto's draw. I do. I was pretty sure they would stay inside the top 4 to 5 there. So out of that particular matchup, being in the Waverly Gallia bracket with Hillsborough there in the first round, compared to what it could have been, I looked down the line there and I saw some potential of, you know, some schools like Logan Elm and so forth. And I thought overall it's a pretty good draw. I watched Unioto Hillsborough the other night in kind of a weird Wednesday night game, kind of a dead atmosphere. And, you know, as I talk about in Division II, a lot of times, you know, Hillsborough is not a great basketball team. But again, in Division II, the difference you get is, you know, Unioto just gets challenged a little bit more in an athleticism and size and strength way that maybe sometimes the bottom half of the SVC just simply can't do. So I think it's a good matchup. I don't think Unioto played their best game that night by any stretch. So I feel like it's a first round matchup that, you know, they should be able to be successful in. And then you're not getting out of Division II without being a good team. It's just no way around it. That Division II bracket is insane when you start to break down, especially the fact that they only get the 4 spots to the convo instead of 8. Basically, what you get, if you're more of a Division III fan, you're basically winning a district semifinal level matchup in order to just get to the convo. You know, some years when teams are going up and down from D2 to D3, You'll end up getting those 8 spots. So in that case, like a Unioto Hillsborough would be treated more like a sectional championship game. So some really difficult matchups throughout Division II. So there's no way around that. So in that case, I like Unioto. As far as Zane Trace, I don't hate the matchup for Zane Trace, but I hate it for the SVC. It's one of those things where we've kind of felt like Piketon was going to get somebody the second half of the year, and that didn't play out. Well, now they're going to get another chance. So it's assuming, you know, they can beat West Union, which isn't a given. I can't imagine Zane Trace loves the draw, but at the same time, I'm sure Piketon isn't in love with it either. I'm sure, you know, with Piketon starting to play a little bit better, I assume they'd have rather been staring at another team. So it's one of those all SVC things, John, where you play it and you see who's good enough to advance on that night. But as far as the league goes, I'm sure we would have rather seen that come out a different way. So I guess that's my take on Unioto Zane Trace. They're both going to be, you know, favored to advance, and hopefully they can play well and do so.
Mm-hmm. Okay. John, any comments there? I know you're kind of up against it with the Unioto matchup and so forth, but any thoughts on Zane Trace?
Well, I'll just say for Unioto, I think being able to see that Hillsborough is pretty decent despite their record this past week, I think will probably definitely help our guys going into that game to kind of try to avoid the upset, because that's still a pretty good team. Mm-hmm. They'd probably be middle of our league right now, but they could definitely push a couple of top half teams. I think possibly how well they played Zane Trace last year in the sectional final could also keep our guys our heads up. And, you know, that's, I think that was about as good of a draw as we were going to get. So, you know, it's going to be tough to get out against whoever you play in Division II. Now for Zane Trace, you know, the one thing I like about it is the fact that I think we have a good chance to get a SVC team to at least the district final coming out of that side. With Adina also being on the bottom side, with Alexander not playing as well lately. I was hoping Piketon would possibly be able to get up to the 14 and kind of, you know, go away from Zane Trace. Mm-hmm. That earlier loss to Portsmouth, I think they lost by a point earlier in the year. It was Gallia they lost by a point too, but they lost a game that they had a chance to win down at Portsmouth early in the season. I think that was probably the difference there. But I don't love that as a sectional final for Zane Trace, because, you know, Piketon's got some really nice pieces. you know, I think St. Joe's can take care of business there, but at the same time, that's a good Piketon team. That's not going to be an easy sectional final for either them or Unieta.
All right. We've talked about ZT. Now let's look at the rest of D3, which includes Edina, Piketon, Southeastern, and Westfall.
Well, in the D3, I don't love the spots that Westfall and Southeastern go into. I think those are some tough draws. We talked about Zane Trace Piketon. I guess the one that's really intriguing to me is Edina's bracket. You know, Edina, as we mentioned, was a team that early in the year just played an insane schedule. And went through some tough times, and one of those was I think it was like a Tuesday night trip to Alexander. And again, we talked about this earlier in the year. If you've ever been to Alexander, that's a tough place to play. Definitely a non-league game on a Tuesday night. It's a long trip, and you know. But Alexander went through a devastating injury, and you know, to my knowledge, as I talked to different people. It appears that he's not going to be back, a very talented guard, mm-hmm. and that's completely changed the dynamic of that team. You know, they're still a good team, still very capable, still have a, you know, an elite big in the middle. But, you know, as if you look where Adina's coming and you know, the reason you play that schedule is for this time of year. You know what I mean? What you're saying is we feel like we want to be battle tested. We want to go through these different things and, you know, if it gets to be a neutral site situation there where they have to the rematch with Alexander, it's a matchup they certainly can be successful in. So, again, my take on the schedule would have been maybe not so severe, and maybe we would be looking more at a 6-7-8 seed. But, you know, again, the reason you do that is to be battle tested, and we'll see how it goes. But I'd like a Dean in that rematch in a really close game. So not a wonderful overview of D3, especially when our top two of our top three Division III teams have to play each other. Mm-hmm. But overall, I definitely think there's a couple opportunities to find a combo there. And when you combine that with the D2 opportunity, so far, so good as we analyze here the top half of our league.
All right. John, what do you think?
I like Westfall's chances to get a win. Belpre is obviously they have a winning record, but they're in the Hocking version of the TBC, which is the smaller conference, and I think their record might be inflated a little bit with a couple of the teams that they're playing. So I think that's a gettable game for Westfall. Then if they would win that, they'd have to go against, you know, a Fairland team that's really tough, but also has just recently lost a game to Gaia Academy. So I think they're kind of a gettable team. If you play really well and they've got the shooters and athletes that I think could mess with a team like that. So not a great draw, but at the same time, I think it gives them a chance to do some stuff. Be nice for them to get a tournament win, give themselves a chance at a sectional title. I don't like Southeastern's draw. Although if you watched our game against them on Friday, they played really well. It was a nice bounce back. And they've got some nice pieces. I mean, you know, they're very sophomore heavy. The East Step kid played very well the other night. So I think that, I saw South Point this summer and they're going to play fast. So, you know, it's going to be a tough matchup, but at the same time, that's good experience for those kids. You know, to play a team that, you know, isn't going to dominate them size-wise, that I think they could probably do some stuff against. So that'll be an interesting matchup for them. I, like Shane, you said, I really like Adina's matchup. You know, it's an Alexander team that has lost four of their last five games, two of their three without the Kearns kid who you mentioned went down with a knee injury. So they're not playing very well right now. At a time, they looked like they were going to be pushing for like a 2 or 3 seed maybe, and now they're down to the 7. You know, I think that is that's another one that they could definitely get and get to a third game with St. Trace at the Convo. You know, I do think that's, you know, not – I don't love the 10 seed for Adina. But I mean, really, it's North Adams comes in with a bunch of wins, and South Point, I do think Adina's probably a little bit better than when at full strength. But, you know, that's just kind of how things go with the seeding sometimes.
Mm-hmm. All right. That's D3. What about the D4 bracket? What are your thoughts on PV and Huntington?
Probably kind of in the middle somewhere. I think Paint Valley is a very dangerous Division IV team. I think when healthy, and there's an outside shot, they're going to get healthier this week. At least that's the hope. It's a tough team to analyze. I mean, you know, if they get back to full strength here and they get a little experience, a little ball handling, you know, the White Oak team's a scrappy group. And then obviously New Boston, extremely talented. They're very, very good. But John, as you were saying, you know, just in terms of the grind of the SVC this year compared to maybe who they're playing, that's not to say New Boston isn't good, because they are. They're very, very good. But there's certainly half of that schedule that would not compare to the likes of what the Side of Valley Conference is this year. Then as far as Huntington goes, I think, again, Huntington really hurt by scheduling and really hurt by, you know, the way this whole thing's played out. I don't hate the Sims Valley bracket, but I'm not crazy about the South Webster draw. You know, keep in mind, South Webster, what's it say there, John? 11 losses. Yep. Well, you know, you're in a mix of a Wheelersburg, a Waverly, an Oak Hill. I mean, all the way down the line there, that's a tough grind. So, I think Huntington and Paint Valley are going to be dangerous Division IV teams, no matter who they play. I don't love Huntington's first round matchup. If they somehow could pull that shocker off, I would almost like their final better.
Yeah, me too.
But again, Paint Valley, obviously, you know, a solid White Oak team, a really good New Boston team. But I guess all I would say there is I've watched this Paint Valley team play, you know, 20-minute segments with a Uniota, a 16 to 20-minute segment with a Zane Trace. So I know it's there somewhere. It's just a matter of, you know, can you pull it all together here and maybe find a little bit of one of those special runs at, right here at the right time of year. So, you know, maybe I'm being too much fan there, too much optimist, but I guess that's the way I look at it in terms of, you know, these two schools, you needed more wins to get out of some of these situations, but no matter where they're at, they're going to be a dangerous out in Division IV.
John, your thoughts?
Yeah, I personally would have liked to see Huntington possibly slip one more slot to get a much more winnable little bracket there, because South Webster is going to be a really tough matchup. That if you just think about kind of how the bottom half of the SEC can be at times, that going against the top half, that's really what South Webster's goes sure, through within sure. that SEC too. So, you know, they've kind of gotten hot as well. I think they've won like four of their last six, something like that, to where, you know, it probably helped them a little bit seeding wise. Or if even they could have jumped up to the 10 and just given Huntington a South Gallia. You know, so it's going to be a tough matchup for the Huntsmen. But maybe they can win, you know, two or three games this week and get some confidence going into that as well. So that could help maybe get them going hot at the right time, even if they're, you know, a little worn out. Paint Valley, I do think that's a winnable game with White Oak. White Oak's really young, but pretty talented. But I don't think they have the overall size to be able to contain Grubb and Newland. So that could be a high scoring game. You know, in New Boston, they're really talented. They don't play the most disciplined basketball. So that's a team you might be able to get in a one and done situation because of if you can play a little bit more disciplined style of ball. So I don't hate the draw for either of them. I don't love either of them either, but I do think that they can do some things if they both get hot.
All right, guys, next week we'll have the first round of the girls' action taking place. And, of course, we'll report on that in our next podcast. But up next in this podcast, we continue our annual tradition of honoring the top girls in the SVC as we name our website's All-SVC Girls Basketball Team. And this second full segment's going to be brought to us by Advanced Services Heating, Cooling, and Refrigeration. You can find them on the web at advancedservicesHVAC.com. You can call them 877-947-4499. They are celebrating over 20 years of serving Southern Ohio. And if you so desire, you can schedule a consultation today on their website. Again, Advanced Services Heating, Cooling, and Refrigeration. Well, this is always a kind of a popular segment for the podcast, as Shane alluded to earlier. We've done it for, 9 years now, Shane, or something like that? And I know it seems like you get a lot of comments about this, good and bad, and a lot of people have differing views on it. But why don't you kind of give us a little rundown on how we've done it in the past and how, if any, format changes for this year, or are we going to kind of stay the same on it?
Well, in the history of SVCSportsZone.com, it started as an article. We used to have a lot of pictures and a lot of writing and so forth up, and that was really nice. Had a lot of nice feedback there, and people enjoyed that. As the podcast show came on, it overlapped there for a year or two. And then as we moved forward, we just felt like, you know, there's a lot of printed articles. There's a lot of different, you know, pictures and different websites or social media or so forth where the kids are honored in that way. Let's really make it a little bit more exclusive to SVC Sports Talk. So we have found that these particular shows are some of our highest in terms of listener, you know, numbers. And yeah, just kind of a way for the kids to get a different type of recognition. Now, as always, anytime I've been involved in coaching, I've kind of steered away from, you know, voting on those particular kids. So sometimes I've, you know, I was with Huntington there for a while now with Payne Valley and so forth. So, you know, when you look at the Payne Valley team this year, there was four seniors, four upperclassmen, you know, the seniors being Bailey Urig and Grace Mustard, Angel Pearl, Annika Campbell. And then our younger kids, probably statistically, would be some of the kids more into the all-league mix. Olivia Smith is obviously an elite rebounder. Hannah Urig's a double-digit scorer. You know, Abby Stanforth, Avery McFadden, certainly future potential all-league type of kids. But those eight kids, you know, that make up our rotation when healthy, I will not be ranking them in any way tonight. So, again, I at least wanted to throw out some recognition to them, not to cheat them. But I just don't think it would be fair in terms of me putting them into a ranking. So we'll do a coach of the year, a player of the year, a first, second, third team honorable mention. I might just change the format up a little bit, Bruce, as we get going, depending on how you want to ask it. I might break it down team by team to kind of place them into the puzzle by team. Okay. And then we'll kind of recap at the end just to make sure there's no confusion on who actually made our overall list. But as I got to doing it this year, it just seemed like it fit that way for me this year when I started to go. I'll be honest, this is one of the easier years I've ever had doing this. Okay. I feel like at least the top, 12, 13 is pretty cut and dry. I guess you're always going to maybe disagree a little bit when you start getting into that, 14 through 18 mix when there's only a couple spots left. Mm-hmm. But overall, I feel like the list is pretty cut and dry. You might disagree with a little bit of the order, but I think all of those things are just normal when you do something like this.
Okay, well, let's start as we normally do with the coach of the year. I'll let you comment on that.
Well, I certainly, as you look down through the league, I have a lot of respect for some of the different things, you know, the way Zane Trace's programs bounce back and the way it's trending up. I know it didn't really show up in the win column, but obviously they're toward the top. Coach Heist, outstanding job, 18-4 overall, and then Coach Day with the Adena program. But I think it's got to be Coach Miller. You know, Jeff Miller there at Uniota, they obviously had the talent that made them the bullseye, that made them the preseason pick. But again, when you go through and you win all your games, you know, as we've talked about before, that's why, you know, there used to be such the argument of, should we just give the coach of the year to whoever wins the league? And, you know, some people say yes, some people say no, but I will find myself sometimes in coaching, winning is so hard that even when you are the pick, you know, there's something to be said for following through and actually winning it. So if someone told me Coach Heist, Coach Day, someone like that, certainly wouldn't have any problem with that. But I guess if you're going to ask me to make the selection here, it would definitely, I would start my list with Jeff Miller there at Uniota.
All right. So let's move then to the POY, the player of the year.
Player of the year is Allison Basie. I think she's just the most talented player. It's just kind of an eye test. To be honest, I didn't study statistics very much on this, John. That's something I went away from this year too. I just felt confident in my eye test. You know, being a coach in the league, I obviously get a little bit of a deeper look. The way the scheduling and rescheduling happened, I ended up seeing Allison play in person about seven times. I certainly know there'll be some of the top teams that say, you know, that she didn't maybe put up certain numbers against them. And, you know, that's fine. I also watch four different teams either play, you know, a diamond in one box and one, or run two people out of the entire game. So I think people, you know, recognized her as a special talent, a unique talent. Certainly understand Uniota winning or in line to win a gold ball, as well as Southeastern going 18-4. What Uniota sits at, what, 17-3 overall? So
yeah, 17-3.
Again, I just feel like those two teams, and you'll see this on my list, I just feel like those two teams do it with their collection of talent rather than a player of the year talent. So and what's scary about Allison is she's doing this and she still has areas to improve. That's what's scary. Usually when you see a kid that's going to push 1,000 points by the end of her sophomore year, you say, well, you know, she is what she is. This is a kid that has a ton of area of improvement. She's going to get better understanding of just how to make scoring a little bit more of a simple task, especially with her talent in terms of her shot selection, her ability to work away from the ball. She started to find a 3-point shot a little bit. I thought that was something that kind of missed from her arsenal throughout the first part of the season. She's a kid that I've watched two or three times get officiated kind of tough. I've watched some officiating crews put her on the line 25 times. I've watched other officiating crews put her on the line like four. So, you know, all of those factor in. She probably will become a little bit more aggressive or a little bit maybe force the action a little bit more against some of the elite teams. I thought there were some times where she made it easier to guard a talent like hers with maybe not pushing and looking for her shot enough. But, man, what a talented young lady. And she's just, you know, she's a kid that on five or six of the games, she almost just eliminated some of the bottom half of the league by herself. Just a terrific talent. And I, as far as my list, I just feel pretty confident starting that way.
All right. John, let's give you an opportunity here to grade those selections, as it were. What are you thinking? Coach of the year and player of the year?
I think if Uniota hadn't gone through like some of the adversity that they went through with injuries this year, maybe I would say, oh, that's crazy. Jeff Miller shouldn't be coach of the year with the talent they have. But man, he's done a really good job of, you know, piecing together a front court in a way. You know, with three players out for the year with different leg injuries. And I think he's done an outstanding job. Heiss and Day obviously were outstanding as first-year coaches. So if you went that way, either way, like you said, Shane, I don't think there's anything to argue about. Player of the year, it's just – I mean, we were getting ready to play a varsity game against Huntington early in the year, and we're playing, you know, after the girls game, and most of the team went out to watch Allison because how good she is. And, you know, we went out as coaches and watched some too, just to, you know, with a little break between getting ready for the game, just because the type of player that she is. So I don't think you can go wrong there. Like you said, the Uniota and Southeastern collection of talent, I think will be rewarded throughout the teams. So I do think that both your picks are pretty good right there, Shane.
All right. You got a passing grade there, Shane, on those, it sounds like. So that's good. Well,
so far, so good.
Yeah, so far, so good. So you mentioned kind of going from team to team. So which teams would you like to look at first?
Well, with Basie being there at the top of the list, let's just stay with Huntington. And I have one more Huntington kid in my selections, and that takes me all the way down to my final selection. My 15th spot would be Megan Steele. So Huntington's going to kind of bookend my teams this year. I think Megan's a kid that Tremendous athlete, has some length defensively. This is a Huntington team that couldn't always extend out and turn some of the athletes loose because they were only about 5 to 6 deep. And I think that was a little bit of a concern with depth and so forth. So, but Megan was a kid that could really shoot the three, could score a little bit. I think that she fits into the bottom half of that third team. And then I guess what I'll do here, Bruce, is I'll kind of stay toward the bottom of the standings.
Okay.
And let's look at the teams not named Uniota Southeastern. I think with Zane Trace, I think I look at them. I see a product on the court that's very, very much improved. I saw three kids that were on my radar there. I certainly think Lauren Lane's an all-league player this year. I think she had some all-league performances that helped them be far more competitive. So I would put Lauren there on the third team, and I would probably slip in Emily Allen, Gracie McCollum, more to honorable mention. But I thought both of them were worthy of mention when Emily was healthy. She became a double-double kid against a lot of kids. And when I watched Zane Trace on opening day against what ended up being a really good Burn Union team for people who follow girls basketball throughout the extended area, that was a really good team they played. I made the comment to my wife that day that wouldn't surprise me if the McCullough kids as good as anybody on this team here within a month or two. And as we made the turn, that certainly was the case. But I still think Lane was a kid that remained at the top of the scouting report, and just based on the improvements she's made and her ability to score and just like I said, it didn't show up in the win column as much, but the Zane Trace team had another 3-4 games. They were certainly right there. And I think I would also go ahead and honor Piketon. I just really like this kid, Bailey Volgamore. Volgamore finds her spot on my list at the end of second team. So she's in that 10th spot, John. She's a kid that remember some high praise we were throwing out there. I'd mentioned the body type and some of the skill set of an Alexis Overly, and I said I knew that was high praise. But it's just a kid that has a lot of those characteristics. She can shoot the three. She makes teammates better. She can create off the dribble, and then she just has that it factor. You know, we talked about the buzzer beater against Paint Valley, but it's not even the shot going in as much as how much she wanted to take it. You know what I mean? It was that type of thing. So now she had some freshman teammates that certainly did a nice job too. The one that I would pick out on the honorable mention list that was probably the closest to cracking my third team would probably be the Haley Reisner. I think Reisner's a kid that went through some injuries early in the year that might have hurt her a little bit, where maybe some coaches in the league only maybe got a single look at her. But she's certainly a post presence and a factor. And that's a young Piketon team led by Volgamore that they could almost be future SVC champion good in this league. They're that good. So I would probably feel pretty good on those. And then if I just stayed with that line of thinking, I guess my next two teams, Bruce, if I'm avoiding the Southeastern Uniota for now, I guess would take me to what, Westfall Edina?
Yeah.
So when I look at Edina, I see guard play kind of leading the way. I see an improved front line that's getting better all the time. And so I guess the way I would sort that out is they don't quite crack the top five for me. I see Hannah Stark, Jaden Smith sharing some spots there early to middle of second team, somewhere in there. I guess once I'm inside a team, I don't know how much you have to debate, John, who's 6, 7, or 8. You know what I mean? Like, it's just that's who they are. And then I would definitely have to go to their front line at Fogelsong and Ader. I think those are two kids. Ader really rebounding, and Fogelsong, really, really good player. Rebounds that can score a little bit in the post. They would be honorable mention selections for me. I think those are very legitimate honorable mention. Because again, when I say honorable mention, I'm looking at people that I really started to look at in the third team. That's why I even on the Huntington list there, and Emily Halbaugh was close, but I maybe don't mention her there just because I had Megan still so late in my third team. And then as far as Westfall goes, I think Marcy Dudgeon's the no-brainer. I couldn't quite get Marcy into my top five this year. She, too, would be a second-team selection. I thought she really came on the second half of the year. I thought it was a slow start. I thought it was a slow start for the entire Westfall team. But when Marcy hit the second half of the league, she really got rolling. She's going to be an athlete of the week for us on our Herbie Strange athlete of the week too, by the way, where she had a league game of 24. She had a league game of 31. And then, as we know, she just went over the 1,000 point mark. I think it's like, what, the 62nd lady to do that in SVC history. So that's quite an accomplishment, quite a scorer there. As I go down to third team, this one was tough because if you look back over last year, John, coming in the preseason, we probably viewed a Farmer or a Mullins more in this spot. Based on just the 2019-2020 performance, I probably have to give the nod to Petite. You know, Gabby's really shot the ball well. I watched her hit 6 threes the other night, scored 24. But really, that's been the case throughout the year, a pretty consistent shooter score. The only thing I'll say for Farmer and Mullins, they would certainly be honorable mention kids, is, you know, what happens a lot of times when you go through coaching changes, you know, different people have different philosophies. And that's not – who am I to sit here and say what's right or wrong or whatever. I just think, John, what we do know is in different systems, you're asked to maybe do different things. Sometimes you're asked to maybe handle the ball more, be more of a facilitator. Maybe sometimes you're asked to, you know, go to the post because of your size and you know, it takes away some of your number one strengths. So sometimes statistically that can impact those areas. And I think that's the case. Certainly Westfall started to find our groove here. You know, Westfall was a team that we were kind of hard on early in the year. And albeit here we are, as we start to play out the league, they're about a win away from being kind of where we thought they would be in the first place. So that's probably the toughest team for me to sort out, Bruce, but I would probably put Dudgeon on the second team, Petite on the third team, and because of that, I only had 2 Westfall spots. That probably moves a Farmer Mullins type of talent down to honorable mention. So that's kind of where I would stand going into the final 2 teams.
Okay. So on your final 2 teams, what are you thinking? Well, let's give John an opportunity here. John, what are you thinking about those?
I don't think much of them. That's what. No, they're good. I'm just interested to see your first team with Dudgeon not being on it, because especially lately she's just gone she's gone nuts because she's played really well down the stretch for him. You know, obviously, congratulations to her on getting to 1,000 points. I'm glad you mentioned Emily Allen because she's had, like, that's been a fun follow the last couple weeks, too, for Zane Traces, seeing her numbers. She's been really good lately for him. But, man, that's got to be a pretty loaded first team to keep Dudgeon off of there.
Okay. All right, Shane, who do we go to now?
Well, we have 2 teams left, and yeah. if you do the math, you know, just about half our selections come from them. But again, at 17-3 and 18-4, and at 13-0 with potential to go to 14-0, and then the 12-2 team, to me that would make sense. Just to maybe clarify before I get to this first team, I guess I viewed a little bit, John, of Hannah Stark and Marcy Dudgeon in a way flipping roles. I thought Stark was really elite at times early in the year, and you look at what Adina did in the first half of the league, where Dudgeon kind of picked up in the second half there, and Westfall's kind of done some of that. Maybe that's where both of them go. Plus the teammate of Smith there for Stark. Obviously, Smith has really stepped her game up as well. But on my first team, obviously beyond Basie, it's going to be an all Uniota Southeastern team. I struggled with this the most. Basically, you know, with some of Uniota's injuries, Emily Coleman's numbers are in terms of averages are a little bit misleading. You know, because she played in some different games. So when you start dividing by a certain number, Bruce, obviously the math is going to be different, right? Like if you played in some games and got hurt and then you didn't score or didn't rebound or assist or whatever. So again, statistically, I didn't really care. I love Amber Cottrell, love her game. Love Cree Stalley. Well, then you have Macy Graves, you have Skylar Heiss. So, I mean, you basically have 5 kids for 4 spots. So, you know, I split it 2-2. The problem is, what two for Uniota? Mm-hmm. I know I have the guard bias. I don't know. You could almost throw them in a hat and draw them out. So on my particular list, I would go Coleman, Cottrell, Graves, and Heiss, and I'll let you argue on the order, which slips Stolle to the second team. I almost feel like we have, you know, six or seven, you know, first teamers, and then everybody else in a lot of ways this year, because I, you know, obviously Cree Stolle's in that mix from a talent standpoint. We talked about statistically, a lot of times what happens is there's one ball to go around. So, it spreads the wealth a little bit. And, you know, at the end of the day, that's why the team award's going to be, you know, league champ. So that's probably where I would go there, which, would bump Stolle down, just, you know, for no more reason than just a numbers crunch. And then I almost had Huff as high as second team. I just felt like Bailey Volgamore, in terms of the level Piketon played at, if you analyze Piketon's second half, I feel like she's a top 10 player. So Sydney Huff falls into my 11 spot, and then Avery Miller into the 12 spot. I certainly think Sierra Mitten is an honorable mention selection. I just couldn't quite get the 4 for Southeastern. And then I absolutely think Hallie Pinkerton's an honorable mention selection. I just couldn't get the 5 spots for Uniota, even as dominant as they were. I just think there were some other kids that needed to be honored there on the third team. So I guess if I clean it all up, Coach Miller, Coach of the Year, Basie, Player of the Year, joined by Cottrell, Coleman, Graves, and Heiss. Again, I'll let you argue on that order, with Cree Stolle right there on the edge, you know, knocking down that first team door, joined by Stark, Smith, Dudgeon, and Volgamore. And then it goes Huff, Avery Miller. There's the Petit, Lane, and Steele on the third team. So all the honorable mention kids there, Fogelsong, Ader. Had a how about on the list a little bit when Steele did have Reisner, did have Mitten, Pinkerton, Farmer, and Mullins there were certainly on my radar. And then I mentioned Allen and McCullough. So pretty confident on my list this year. I think it's a fair list. The ones that bother me the most were Stolle on the edge of first team, and then Huff and Volgamore there on the edge of second team. But certainly feel like, If you're eliminating the Paint Valley kids, and just me looking as a coach, looking at the other top 15, that's probably the way I would rank them.
That's pretty good, I think. But we'll give John one more opportunity here to interject. What do you think, John?
I reckon it's all right. I think if you look at Uniota, I think those three are all going to be really close, with Stolle, Coleman, and Cottrell. So it's kind of you pick your order on that, and I don't think you'd really go wrong. They've all been really good contributors throughout their careers, and I think have really earned it. I think Avery Miller more than deserves to be at least third team. And then I think Uniota with the Southeastern ones. I do think that Graves and Heist are probably there. They're top two on that, so I think that's a good choice.
John, I didn't mean to interrupt here, but here's one thing that was on my mind. I'd love to get just someone else's take, because I almost went Basie, and then went Coleman, Cottrell, Stolle, and Graves. But to me, from last year to this year, we kind of talked it in the preseason, and then we just kind of almost took it for granted all year. Wasn't Skylar Heiss just a complete X factor from 2019 to now 2020?
Yeah, because I watched the last game of the year last year with Uniota and Southeastern, and Southeastern just wasn't very good. And then they just added one player. I mean, and it made them, oh, they're really good now.
Yeah. I mean, well, and obviously those other kids got better. Well, Sierra had a much improved point guard and so forth. But yeah, I understand where you're coming from there.
Yeah, like I didn't think before I saw them in person, I even though I knew they were winning, I still didn't think, man, this team's gonna be much of an actual threat, because, you know, obviously with year by year improvements you make, but man, it's just bringing the passion and energy and effort, just the nonstop motor that Heiss brought, I think was huge for Southeastern and kind of their bounce back year this year. So I was very impressed with Heiss.
Yeah, and I'll tell you this too, Bruce. I always look at it as, if I was drafting players, mm-hmm. how would it it. You know what I mean? Like if I were a coach and I was just out there in an open draft, and you know, that kind of plays a factor too. Sometimes you certainly wouldn't go wrong with about the top 8, 9, 10 kids this year, but there's even other kids. Like I've been really high on Mullins of Westfall from last year to this year. Now, statistically, it just didn't happen this year. I know she went through an injury earlier in the year. So there's even kids all the way down on the honorable mention list sometimes that you just watch and you're like, man, I really like that kid. I really, really like the skill set or the unique ability to, you know, last year, her ability to stretch the floor so much from three, where again, this year, maybe in a different role. I guess the only other question I had for you, John, and you, I could tell that it was on your mind a little bit. I wanted you to elaborate on it a little bit, is Dudgeon. You know, it's just I couldn't get her to the top five. I think with Westfall, you know, I like their top four kids a lot. She certainly separated herself this year. I just couldn't quite get her into the top five. Do you think that speaks a little bit to the SVC Girls League maybe being, you know, just a little bit better in terms of talent level than maybe we thought in the preseason?
Yeah, I do think so, because once you mention the players and everything, and then I'm like, okay, that makes sense. But if you just look at – if you were just watch Dudgeon play, you just go, oh, man. That's
right, right.
You know, that's a top five player. But if you really break it down by, you know, wins and losses and kind of what each player brought to the table, I definitely can understand having the top five you had, and I had no issue with it at all after hearing it, because you know that just shows the depth of the girls' league. It was much better than I think we expected to start the year, with Adina making rapid improvement, and they had a little lull about three quarters of the way through the year, but played much better. And it seems like Westfall's playing a lot better here at the end of the year as well. So I do think it's going to be a interesting when they release these teams on Wednesday, and seeing how the league keeps improving moving forward too.
Yeah, Bruce, I think I had Graves in their last four league wins hit 14 threes. So wow. It gives you an idea of her size, her ability to stretch the floor, and then you know what Heist does just in terms of all the intangibles. It's just it was tough to keep those two Southeastern kids at 18-4, 12-2 out of the top five.
Yeah. Shane, any idea how many girls games you witnessed this year? I mean, I know you get a lot of
them. Obviously, you know, all the ones you coach in.
Right.
And then because of the weather and the illness and all that, it's just like I said, I've seen, you know, gosh, just off the top of my head here, Huntington Westfall. I saw Huntington Southeastern. I saw Huntington Uniota. And then I've seen some various games on film and some different things there. So, yeah, it's, you know, probably close to – I'd say over 20-25 maybe, if you count every different type of game I was able to watch.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot of games, and so you've got a pretty good you know, a sampling to make these kind of determinations, but I'm sure there's somebody out there that has a different opinion, and we'll let them know.
And it's funny you say that, Bruce. I'm glad you said that, because what happens is there are certain people at the top where, you know, some people will joke about different things about, like, you know, well, why didn't they just do this or why didn't they just do that? And you want to tell some people sometimes from Southeastern, well, see, like the other teams in the league, we don't have 17 people that are 6 foot tall.
Right.
Or like you want to tell people that we don't have 17 athletes that we can run at this person while we still pressure the ball with this person. Yeah, it's hard. And that's what makes some of these kids, you know, so unique in the terms of their talent level and in terms of what the pressure they put on an opposing team throughout the entire league standings.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's not an easy thing to do. You just amaze me, continue to amaze me, both of you, with your knowledge of the SVC and of the SVC athletes that we feature here each week on the podcast. Well, guys, we're going to move along to our final segment tonight. We're going to discuss the right way and the wrong way to prepare for the upcoming tournament opponents. All Our final segment tonight going to be brought to us by Crown Hill Golf Club, 9500 U.S. Route 22 West in Williamsport. Their phone number up there, 740-986-4653. And you can look up all kinds of detailed information on their website, which is crownhillgolfclub.com. Crown Hill Golf Club, as we say, the official golf course of SVC Sports Talk. They have that banner, I'm sure, just plastered all over the place up there. Give Kevin and his staff a call. And it's not going to be too long. I just saw a little bit ago that someone's saying it's like March 10th when we bump the clocks up. Spring's not too far away, folks, believe it or not. I know it doesn't seem like it from time to time, but you'll be out hitting the little white ball around before you know it there, Shane. So it's not that long away.
I could have a little teaser here.
Okay.
Kevin could be giving us kind of a unique announcement here real soon. I don't know. I'm not going to say it publicly until I can verify with him, but there could be some unique golf changes here in the near future. I'll just put it out there that way. Hopefully I'll be able to share with all of the fans here soon.
Yeah, man, I won't be able to sleep now for nights and nights and nights. So we'll keep in touch with that. So, well, guys, I wanted to talk a little bit about the right way and the wrong way to prepare for the upcoming tournament opponents. And I don't know whether, Shane, you can kind of give us some color as to how this came in, but we're going to talk about in this day of technology with Huddle and all the other resources. First, we'll just kind of throw this out there to John. John, do you feel that sharing film is the right or the wrong way when it comes to doing so against league schools?
Well, I almost think they should just make it to where it's mandatory you share your last three films. I mean, like, kind of like in football, that way you don't worry about, like, say Shane, me and you are going to play. We just share with each other our last three films. That way you don't have to do the backdoor stuff and try to kind of sneak around about it. But I still like to share the one story from a few years ago, where, one coach of the all league meeting, said, hey, we should make an agreement that nobody shares our films to anybody in the non-league. And everybody's like, yeah, that's great. And then it came out like 2 months later that when we were getting ready to play Waverly in the district championship, that they had literally 20 of our films.
Wow.
Which means that had to be pretty much all of our games. So it's like, it is what it is. I mean, it's usually people doing favors, one way or the other. I don't know. I don't necessarily think it's wrong. I don't necessarily think it's right either. I think if the league made an agreement in some way to figure it out to where nobody has to kind of sneak on it,
yeah,
or anything. Because other leagues will give out films on certain teams. There's a couple leagues that you don't get anything from, unless it's somebody that they play in the non-league. But it's hard because you don't want to hurt somebody else. But sometimes I would guess that somebody might help you with a tournament seeding if you help them with something. I don't know. It's just I think there's so many different layers to it that I don't think there's a white and black on it. I think there's a lot of gray.
You think there's some quid pro quo going on here in the
yes.
sharing? I see. Shane, what are your thoughts right now?
Well, this is a topic that was brought to me by multiple fans here in the last couple of weeks. That's why I thought it'd be a great topic right now around tournament time. I think this is something that's just changed a lot. What would you say, John, in the last 10 years? I mean, I think, with the way technology and the way things have grown, I think it just happens more naturally now than, say, it would have, say, 10, 15 years for sure. Now with Huddle and how easy it is to trade a film and so forth, I think it's fine. I mean, I would feel better about it sometimes if you're doing something to help your kids. Sometimes you have to do what's best for your kids, there's a reason we call it trading films. You know, sometimes you may have to give up something to get something back. If I'm just randomly, you know, sitting around one night and someone starts calling asking about, you know, certain schools around our league, I might just ask, I'd rather not comment on that or whatever, you know, that's fine. But, you know, I think when it comes to trading films and so forth, I still personally love the opportunity to get out and scout in person. I'm very old school in that way. There, you know, I've been burnt on film a couple times before when that film is up in the rafters set up, you know, with the huddle. And you think they go, you know, 6-3, 6-5 on the front line, John, and then you show up at night in warmups and they go about 6-6, 6-7.
Oh yeah.
You know, I mean, you've been burned on that before, but it's a tough call, Bruce. And I'm not gonna sit here and act like I have the perfect answer, because it would help if there was a rule in place to where, you know, everyone just felt like there was something to follow. But that even goes back to, you know, we take for granted sometimes that everybody has every game on film. You know, a lot of times, you know, you may not have a school that buys you huddle. It's not cheap. You may have a school that doesn't give you that access, or you may not have someone who tapes every game. So a lot of times you don't have the best quality of every game, depending on who was doing it or where they were filming it from. So I go back and forth. There's part of me that loves it being open, John, because I feel like if I can pride myself in outworking the other coach in preparation, you know what I mean? They may be better than me, but I can at least outwork them in preparation. So if I have that chance to go get more and more films, that's good. But I could also see where it puts, you know, coaches and relationships in a bad situation. When there's a lot of different opinions out there on this. So I would love to hear from some different coaches. Obviously I've been a head coach in baseball for a long time, but a lot of my coaching in basketball over the last decade has been just the assistant variety. It's been a while since I've been, you know, a basketball head coach. I would love to hear from some of our head coaches in the area, even off the record. I wouldn't share names. I would just love to get honest feedback in terms of how this goes, because let's face it, this is the time of year where it gets crazy when you're searching for preparation with teams that are in your bracket and so forth. You feel like you have about a week to get ready, and you know, so every film you can get, I'm sure it's important to get.
Shane, for those of I'm familiar with huddle. I think many of probably the listeners are, and I know you guys probably, you know, really rely on huddle. But it used to be that you literally, you know, at one point had to swap resources. You had to meet and, you know, give them up or have them delivered or whatever. How what's the process with huddle to grant somebody access to some tape that you have on huddle or some video that you have on huddle? Is it difficult?
Well, it's funny you say that, because I can remember in my younger days of coaching driving clear over to, like, to the courthouse area on a Sunday afternoon, just trying to get home on a, you know, and you're sitting there, you know, the good old school VHS, you know what I mean, like, right, pass back and forth. Where now on huddle, it's just as simple as a request. I mean, it's as simple as I request it, John says yes, here it is, and I have it. I mean, so you're talking that simple, to where it keeps you from driving all over Southern Ohio or even all over Southern Ohio to go scout in person. So it's a lot easier. And that's why I think the question, the way the fan worded it in terms of some of these resources that are out there, I just think it's becoming more and more the norm. I'm not saying there's certain coach. A lot of times, John, what you get is, you know, we all have respect for one another as coaches, but let's face it, there's certain coaches that you get along better with. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm sure that plays a role. You know, there's certain coaches where I've asked for certain films, and it'd be like, I've known so and so for a long time. I'd rather not give a film up. And I'd be like, I'll ask another coach, hey, would you be willing to give this out? I know it's a league school, but would you be willing to give it or whatever? And, you know, they're more than willing. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of factors there. I don't mean to dodge the question to our fans that have asked it. I'll just be honest. I don't know what the perfect answer is. I think at the end of the day, you have a job to help prepare your kids or take care of your kids the best way possible. I guess would be the one stance I would take.
You didn't really say it, Shane, but, and I mean, John kind of did address this, but do you just feel that it would, that basketball needs a mandatory rule for sharing film? Would that not make it easier?
I think it would. John, do they not have that at the regional level?
I don't remember.
I'd have to ask my brother. I thought when he was in the regional championship there, you know, a couple years back, I thought they had talked about, he had mentioned a rule. Like, I'll have to ask him. I thought there was a, when you get to a certain level of the tournament, I thought that that was something the OHSA had adopted.
It wouldn't surprise me. I know when we played John Glenn a couple years ago, we had several. So that really might have been, that may have been something dealing with that. So, it wouldn't surprise me, because I mean, it's so hard to scout teams sometimes across regions. So,
right. Yeah.
All right. Well, interesting topic there as well. And if you'd like to provide your comment or thoughts on any of the topics we've discussed tonight, you may contact these gentlemen. They put themselves out there, give you their opinions. Let's hear yours. If you'd like to get in touch with any, either of them, you may do so on email. Shane, his email address is admin1@svcsportzone.com. John's email address is jbruce1018@yahoo.com. On Twitter, which they both use from time to time, Shane's handle is svcsportzone. And John's handle is Coconut Wall Papa, not paper, Papa, Coconut Wall Papa. And when they do tweet about SVC sports items, they usually use the hashtag SVC Sports Talk. So you can just search for that hashtag, and a lot of information about SVC sports just pops up. On Facebook, Shane maintains two profiles, Shane Combs, SVC Sports Zone, and SVCSportsZone.com. You can also call the DBK Media Services voice line and leave a voicemail message. To do that, you dial 740-569-3254. We remind you, if you're listening on iTunes, we'd love to have a great rating, and we'd love a good review if you could do that. And if you share on, or if we share on Facebook or Twitter, we ask that you share on Facebook our information, and if you could retweet our information on Twitter, that would be wonderful. Guys, we're moving into your final segment here of the show, and first thing, couple things I'd like to ask from you. John, first, why don't you just give us your thoughts on the JV freshman and junior high programs this year, and what might you see as the future of the boys' league?
Well, I think the quality of JV basketball is better this year. Zane Trace has really nice sophomore group. You may not have heard much about, just because of how talented their seniors are, with some nice freshmen as well. I think that they'll, you know, it's going to be a step back, obviously, but I don't think it'll be as drastic of a step back as people thought. They have a good eighth grade group as well. Southeastern did some interesting stuff with their quarters. So they'll be actually, when they play Zane Trace on Friday, will be for the JV league as well. Cause I think Zane Trace has one loss. Southeastern has two. So if Southeastern beats them, it'll be a two-way tie there, for the JV league. You know, I think with, some of the teams in the junior high, Piketon's got a couple of nice players that'll be coming along. Like I mentioned, Zane Trace, Adina has a little more depth than I think was originally thought with their group. Uniota's kind of loaded with their eighth grade group, really talented group of kids. And our freshmen are going to win the league. You know, shout out to Coach Nick Rose and his kids. They right now are, I think, 9-0 in the league, something along those lines. And they've done a really good job of, you know, dealing with having a lot of kids that haven't played a lot. That's where kind of the depth does help with our guys. But at the same time, most of those guys didn't play very much in junior high. So a lot of them doing new things, or the one who did start all of last or all the last couple of years was actually playing out of position. Turner Marco did a great job this year for running the point for him. So, you know, obviously really good group of kids there. You know, I think the future is bright across the league. I think the junior high coaching's pretty good from what I've seen. So I've been pretty pleased with that. And I think the lower levels of the high school have been pretty good as well. You know, and I think that just helps kind of build a program. And one thing I'll say, you know, with, you know, our varsity team has 12 guys on the roster. Seven of those guys played almost exclusively freshman basketball, you know, which once again, that helps with our depth to where they weren't playing up earlier. But that just shows that how important freshman basketball is, because let's say you get rid of that spot, some of those guys may not have seen much playing time as freshmen, might have got discouraged and not came back. So I do think freshman basketball is incredibly important. I think we have to do what we can to keep it going, because I think that helps build programs. Obviously, if you're really short on numbers in the upper class, I think that, you know, you can go a year or two without it and it not really hurt you too much. Like I don't really think the sophomores at Southeastern not playing freshmen last year and just playing JV, I don't think that's hurt them. They just had to grow up a little faster, but I do think it's, if you can help it, I think it's really good to keep that going.
Well, how many of those kids did you lose? We only know the ones we see, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like I can't help it the whole time you're saying that. You're thinking of, you know, being like call it sophomore basketball to where we'd have eight teams in the league every year. Mm-hmm. You know, that's frustrating that we can't make that happen.
Right. Yeah. I think if the more kids you can keep in, the chances of them kind of growing as players, just grows. And if you get good coaching, I think that, you know, is makes it to where those kids are getting even better. Because you don't know who's going to really grow or kind of grow into the athlete that they're going to be as juniors and seniors, that, you know, until they're a junior or senior. So you want to try to keep kids in the program as long as you can their first 2 years, and maybe they can figure it out, or maybe they go, this isn't for me, but at least you give them a chance. And I think if you eliminate certain areas, you know, especially like, and I look on the girls' side with the JV stuff, I just think, you know, maybe you're not getting a lot of your JV program, but there's going to be a time where you do. So why wouldn't you want that? Why wouldn't you want more kids doing this? And you just never know what you're going to find, or who's going to find something that they love in the sport. So maybe someone's not a great player, but maybe they can help the program in some way. Maybe they can be a really good practice player by the time they're up to the varsity years. Maybe there's somebody that's eventually going to want to be a coach, even if they can't play that well. So you just never know with kids. And I think you really got to do what you can to keep guys along. And I do think the future of our league looks pretty bright with from what I've seen this year.
All right. Shane, why don't you kind of go over on the girls' side and give us our thoughts on JV and junior high over there?
Well, down in the junior high in the seventh grade, I know Piketon has a nice group, and obviously that's something they're going to be excited about, because that's going to be the perfect supplement there when this year's freshman class, John, become juniors and seniors. Mm-hmm. You know, that's all they're going to need is some more help. So, you know, that's going to make for a nice combination. I know Westfall has a pretty nice group. Adina has a nice set of teams there in the junior high. I think their seventh grade is kind of a top half team. Their eighth grade team, I believe, went undefeated. Very, very talented group there when you consider the couple talented freshmen they have in their program. And then, of course, their talented sophomore group that's going to combine together. I think most teams feel like they have some pieces in the eighth grade throughout that league. So I think the eighth grade group coming up into high school is going to help supplement the JV league. The JV league was down just a little bit this year because our varsity league was so young. I think what you're talking about, John, where a lot of the varsity teams on the boys side, a little bit older, a little bit more second year people, you know, maybe made the JV group hit and miss a little bit younger throughout. I think on the girls side, I think the eighth grade group will supplement that JV. And then guys, I'll be honest, I feel a little bit unprepared on the JV girls basketball. I don't have a clue. Like what happened this year was Piketon played two quarters most nights with the kids kind of sharing quarters. So you can imagine how out of place they were in JV basketball at times in two quarter games, but I don't think they played them all. Well, then I think the league is looking at not counting two quarter games, which is something we've never done in the past. When we play two quarters, they've counted. So I'll be honest, I don't have a clue. I think Uniota and Adena had some pretty good JV groups. But again, Southeastern, not bad. I Huntington was competitive. I saw Huntington on two unique nights, John, where they had all of their kids for four quarters. You know what I mean? So that was different. You know, where on a normal game night where you're playing JV and varsity at the same time, that may not be the case. So, Bruce, I apologize. I'll have to do some homework on that. When the All League's released, I assume there'll be a JV champion on the list, mm-hmm. and I'll be able to better prepare because, like I said, if they take all the two quarter games out and they just look at records, then that's going to change everything. That's going to – my guess would be Uniota or Adena. But I totally apologize if there's a team out there that I'm not highlighting for the year that they had. But I will do my homework a little bit better there and try to make sense of the JV Girls League next week on the show.
All right. Well, John, what else do you have coming up this week?
I'm going to be partying.
Ah, okay.
I don't know. I'll be at some games. We still got two games left. On the regular season, we go up to Courthouse on Tuesday, and then we have Westfall on Friday. So I'll definitely be getting prepared for those games, but I'm going to try to get down, try to get out and watch some girls' tournament games as well. You know, it's and try to catch up on who knows what in the whenever people are playing this week and finish up the regular season and whatnot, going to try to get out and watch some of those games as well. So, excited for the week. Hopefully the snow holds off in the middle of the week. But it looks like outside of the cold, it's going to be pretty decent.
Yep. Sure does. Shane, what about you?
Well, I think we're just going to try to make sense of the week. Obviously you're going to have, girls tournament starting. Mm-hmm. You're still going to have some regular season mixed in there. So I'll try to do a good job on the scoreboard of saying what's a regular season game, what's a tournament game, just so everyone's clear so they can also look at final records. And I would encourage fans not to sleep on the boys league. Let's not take for granted Uniota and Zane Trace here. Again, We've seen Southeastern be very competitive. We've seen Westfall be very competitive. And I think winning league championships is really hard. And that's something we need to be respectful of and still pay attention and watch carefully there. And then obviously we'll be getting into the boys tournament the week after. So, guys, hopefully we can stay weather free and flu free this week and get back into a better routine. But, I hope to get some great feedback on our girls selection. I know there wasn't a lot of guys mentioned tonight by name. Next week we'll flip the script and John and I will try to make sense of this boys league and trying to name some all league kids there and see what we agree and disagree on there. And we'll kind of give the boys a little bit more attention in terms of individual names on next week's show. So on that thought, we'll get on out of here this week, and we'll do it again next week. Fans, again, make sure you're checking out the website, SVCSportsZone.com. We'll always do our best to keep it 100% SVC, 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk.
SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk. And visit SVCSportsZone.com, where we're 100% SVC 100% of the time.